This weekend, something very exciting is happening at Harvard University. The well-respected and powerfully relevant humanist chaplaincy is moving into its new home and launching an unprecedented outreach effort that's destined to have an impact far from the ivy-covered walls of Cambridge. The opening of the hub marks a milestone in both the academic and societal potential of the humanist movement, and I'm very pleased that Harvard's humanist chaplain, Greg Epstein, is able to be back with us today here on State of Belief Radio. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Welton. It's always a pleasure.
Start, please, with a quick rundown of the history of the humanist chaplaincy at Harvard, how you cooperate with other chaplains, and whom you serve.
The humanist chaplaincy at Harvard, which now goes by the humanist community at Harvard, has been in existence for well over 30 years, over 35 years, actually. And it started as the first ever humanist chaplaincy serving atheists, agnostics, and the non-religious on a university campus in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that was started by my immediate predecessor, a former Catholic priest named Tom Ferrick. But Harvard University has never given any funding or financial support whatsoever, $0 and 0 cents total over those 35-plus years to the humanist community at Harvard, because Harvard, like many other universities, does not fund any of its chaplaincy or other similar communities around campus so as not to have to discriminate, sort of give more money to the Catholics and less to the Jews, or more to the humanists and less to the Zoroastrians, etc. They simply let us volunteer on their campus, and we can do a lot of things as long as we're financially independent. And so I took over this organization about 8.5 years ago, and it was a tiny little enclave for atheist, agnostic, and humanist students on our campus. We had a few active students, and we had an annual budget of $28,000 a year that included my annual salary and benefits, a $5,000 stipend for the previous chaplain because he was retiring and he hadn't saved for retirement, and any program we wanted to do. So it was a tiny little thing, and that's pretty much what people expected of humanist communities back then. But we have put together a variety of programs, thousands of programs that we've now run in this community since then, with tens and tens of thousands of people attending. And our the saying that we like to use for our programs is that they should be diverse, inclusive, and inspiring. And that means that they should involve a range of people that come from different cultural backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, language, gender, sexuality, age, etc. Inclusive in the sense that we are very open-minded to partnering with religious communities that have common ethical values or common goals. And being in dialogue with people who believe differently than we do, and inspiring in the sense that we stay focused on positive questions about how to live a good and meaningful life as a human being and how to make this world better for all people, not just for ourselves and certainly not just for people who believe like we do. And we've kept that in mind across thousands and thousands of programs, and what we've finally set out to do, and now we're in the process of achieving, is we felt like we needed a physical space, a destination, a home to symbolically represent our community, but more than symbolically, to allow us to do the ambitious kinds of programs that we were trying to do to make people's lives in our community better. And so we're finally opening that place after years of work and raising hundreds of thousands of dollars from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of donors. We're opening a 3,200-square-foot facility in the heart of Harvard Square, and we're calling it the Humanist Hub.
What are some of the services that you'll be adding through the hub?
There are a really diverse range of programs that are meant for people of every age. This is a university-affiliated community, but it's really meant for, anyone and everyone who is interested in this type of community that lives in our local area, and, B, there are actually several programs that we're going to be running that are relevant to people who live anywhere and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll start with the youngest. We have started a Sunday school equivalent or alternative program that we call the Learning Lab. And it's actually run in part by Harvard students, actually in large part by Harvard students. Graduate students at the Divinity School and PhD students at the Graduate School of Education who are researching education, researching how to educate people about moral and ethical values, et cetera, are designing a curriculum that we're putting in place right now once a month for kids ages from real young ages like 3, 4, 5 to up to about 7, 8, 9 or so, and we're eventually going to expand it from preschool all the way through a kind of a confirmation class. But it's to teach kids how to be moral and ethical citizens of the world, while also identifying with a community of humanists when they might otherwise simply in their families say, oh, we're nothing, or we're simply a combination of these different backgrounds, but we don't actually believe anything. We're teaching kids how to be able to say, well, my family, we may have some religious backgrounds, and one of my parents may be religious, but another parent or both parents may be humanists. And talking about their positive values, and even young kids can learn a lot about that prepares them to be a good citizen of the world. And so we're doing that program, and we're using art and music and science and all sorts of things to educate kids about ethics and community.
Oh, that is just terrific.
We do regular interfaith community service programs. So that means that we as humanists and atheists set out to once a month lead a community service endeavor that we invite our religious neighbors to participate with. Us in, and the most recent project was a really nice success. We packaged 50,000 meals for hungry kids in our area, nutritious, non-perishable meals, on Sunday, November 24th, right before Thanksgiving. We had hundreds of people come out for about a six-hour series of shifts to package these meals. We raised $12,000 to pay for the supplies for the meals. It was really a very nice event. So we do those kinds of things regularly. And then every Sunday, people are going to be able to come to the Humanist Hub and hear inspiring talks. We've got a Humanist Hub house band with some extremely accomplished musicians playing a really interesting mix of music. We've got discussion groups of many different kinds, ranging from addiction recovery to exploring existential questions in life to parenting support group, et cetera, et cetera, all around the ideals of humanism.
How is that being seen by, for example, longtime members of what was called the University Church in the Harvard Yard?
The Memorial Church, you mean?
Right. But a lot of people said University Church. Yeah, I was talking Memorial Church.
So the Memorial Church has been very supportive. Many of your listeners may know that we had a longtime famous minister named Peter Gomes here who died a few years ago now. And the new young minister here at Memorial Church is named Jonathan Walton. And I just want to say, if he's listening, shout out to him. He's been incredibly supportive, incredibly gracious about supporting the idea of a humanist community at Harvard alongside all the other religious communities that he's tasked with supporting. So I'm very grateful. I spoke alongside Jonathan at Harvard's memorial service after the marathon bombings in April, and I felt on behalf of our community that we were so warmly welcomed at Harvard, and he and President Faust and others were terrific. Now, on the one hand, we wish that Harvard would change its policy and just send us a check so that it would make this sort of work easier, but on the other hand, it is better for us to be independent. We are an independent nonprofit, which means that we're able to really set our own program agenda alongside our affiliation with Harvard and serving Harvard students. And that has actually allowed us in the past year to take on this new project called the Humanist Community Project, which is, since we've had such wonderful and interesting and challenging experiences pioneering what it means to set up a full-scale humanist community in this area, we've decided in the last 2-3 years that we really need to take that experience and put it to good use for humanists nationwide. And so what we're doing is we're actively studying right now not only our own experiences, but the experiences of those who are building what we playfully call godless congregations all across the United States. And we're trying to work right now on building a network of many different types of humanist communities or godless congregations all across the U.S. so that we can learn from and with one another, and over the next few years build a solid, sustainable, growing, dynamic network of humanist communities and godless congregations across the United States.
That's great. I want to switch gears. Last year, just about this time, I had a fascinating conversation with a brilliant rabbi about getting through Christmas from a Jewish perspective. You face that with not only Christmas, but with Hanukkah in the Jewish tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask you the same question, and I'm not talking about the commercial overkill of the season, but the general tone that's impossible to avoid in this country. How do you navigate this time of the year and not feel like an outsider?
You know, I myself, I'm working on this all the time, and we're organizing some very meaningful holiday season celebrations in our community, especially around this phenomenon of building a new center. So those that I'm directly surrounded by, I think a lot of us are feeling actually more confident these days. We've got a physical space. We've got a way to celebrate our own sense of what this time of year means to us. But I know that, you know, many out there still do not, and there are many in other parts of the country who really do still feel very put upon in some unfortunate ways by a more narrow-minded sense of what this time of year is supposed to mean, Bill O'Reilly, among others, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, I guess I'm just grateful that you're representing a Christian perspective that is more open-minded and broad-minded and supportive of my community. I think that that's all we can really ask, because we've got some really creative people in our community nationwide, and you know, what we're doing is we're saying, actually, this time of year, it gets darker.
Yeah.
It gets colder.
Right.
We need to come together. And that is true for people across many traditions. And that's really why a lot of the Christmas traditions evolved the way that they did. You know, the reason why we light lights and give gifts and come together, especially at this time of year, is because psychologically we need it in the Northern Hemisphere. And humanists are no different from that. And so we've got a lot of different rituals, whatever we call them. Some like the idea of just celebrating a secular version of Christmas or Hanukkah. Some, you know, just wait for New Year's or celebrate the solstice or make up new holidays like Human Light. But, you know, however you want to do it, I mean, these days, Welton, this godless congregation phenomenon is just exploding. There's so many different secular and humanist community groups, and I think every one of them must have its own way of doing things, and that's brilliant. We just want to study the ones that are getting the biggest response and help to spread those responses all around the country so we don't have to have this conversation anymore. Because if you're doing Christmas, you should have fun with it. You shouldn't need to apologize to us, and we shouldn't need to apologize to you. We should all just embrace the fact that we've got a diverse country and we've got many ways of celebrating.
You and I have the kind of relationship that you could come to me and say, how do you deal with the mean fundamentalists in Christianity? And I would feel responsible for saying I probably feel like you do about them. But you know, and I know that there are some people, I don't think nearly so many in the humanist community, but maybe as in the atheist community itself, who are living with anger and resentment because I think they still feel like outsiders. How do you relate to people in the humanist or the atheist community that feel so angry about it all? And I'm asking it because I wonder if it's similar to what I feel about Christians that are angry at everybody else.
And how do you deal with angry Christians?
I deal with them by saying, that's not the gospel I know. That's not the religion that I celebrate.
Yeah. Here in the humanist community that I'm a part of, and this godless congregation movement that is emerging across the country and around the world right now, there really is a consensus emerging, and I'm not dictating this. I'm merely reporting it and to some extent agreeing with it. There's a consensus emerging that what we're trying to do by building secular congregations, godless congregations, is we are trying to represent a positive set of ideals, a positive response to life. We're recognizing that life isn't easy. We are the only ones who can and therefore are responsible to make the world better. Mm-hmm. And that the way to make the world better is by connecting with one another.
Yeah.
And that's our job, and that's our primary focus. And we're trying not to get distracted. I'm trying, mm-hmm. at least, not to get distracted by excessive negative energy. Now,
yeah.
sometimes the world presents us with abuses. Sometimes mm-hmm. religion, as one among many human institutions, you know, really is responsible for abusing mm-hmm. some people.
Mm-hmm.
And those people are rightfully angry, and there is a lot to be angry about. But as you say, it's not all religion. So, you know, if we're going to express anger, you know, express anger about what's happened to you and who did it to you. But it's not that every religious person is the same or every religious tradition is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that we can express anger as one of our human emotions, but we can also do something very positive. And I think that you know, any Christian, any humanist, any religious person of any denomination or sect has the ability to care and have compassion for others. I mean, any healthy person at the very
yeah.
least.
Yeah.
I just think that our communities are really working to do the positive work, and that, I think, will in itself help change the dialogue very much.
Well, that's a fantastic answer. Greg Epstein is the humanist chaplain at Harvard University. He's got a big weekend. It's the grand opening of The Hub, an ambitious project of service and outreach that promises to elevate both the visibility and the substance of the humanist movement in the years ahead. Greg, congratulations on the progress that you've made there. And it's always great to talk with you on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much, Welton. Appreciate everything that you're doing.